Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I'm never surprised by controversies that are whipped up in Washington. Right? That's par for the course. But I'll repeat what I said 2 days ago.
Sure.
We have a basic principle. We do not leave anybody wearing the American uniform behind.
How about the one in Mexico?
We had a prisoner of war.
No, he wasn't. He was a deserter.
Whose health had deteriorated.
Liar, pants on fire.
And we were deeply concerned about it, and we saw an opportunity, and we seized it. And I make no apologies for that.
Liar, pants on fire. So we have an extremist president who was so out of the ken of normalcy, even within the Democrat leftist machine, that they're distancing themselves from the extremist president. I want to talk about extremism today on the Savage Nation. And the only way for you to understand this is for me to put it in reverse. Now, let's say we had elected in 2008 a white man from Somerville, USA, who had spent 20 years in an extremist Christian church that preached white supremacy and then denied that he had listened to the preacher preach white supremacy. And the preacher had been a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and he became president and surrounded himself by extremely radical right-wing ideologues, Health and Human Services, Defense Department, closed down the EPA. And we had this right-wing president now for 6 years doing one imperious thing after another and shocking everyone daily with an outcry running across the land. Then you'd understand what we're talking about when I say to you extremism. Because we have the most extremist president in American history who was so smooth and such a con man. I mean, after all, he's not stupid. He didn't become president by being dumb. He's the greatest con man in the history of America. A man with no experience whatsoever, with a shady background on the far left, as president, getting away with virtual murder. And so what is extremism? Well, let's look at the definition first. Radicalism, fanaticism, extreme, the thesaurus would say, excess, the ultimate, maximum, limit, top, utmost, uttermost, last extremity, bitter end, etc. You get the picture. An extremist is defined in the thesaurus as radical, fanatic. Extreme is defined as an adjective, of course, immoderate, dire, drastic, ultra, utter, rank, extremist, radical, rabid, fanatical. Excessive is defined in a different way. Intense is defined in another way. Excessively is defined in another way. So by any definition, Obama is an extremist. So I'm asking you, if we had had a stealth Manchurian candidate of the right, who had gone to a church for 20 years and listened to a preacher preaching white supremacism and calling for the most extreme acts in America along the lines, let's say, of the Third Reich, but not quite as extreme, because Reverend Wright, to his credit, didn't call for the extermination of any race. We have to give him credit for that, for his moderation in that regard. But let's say as close to the wall as you could get, without having the FBI, you know, invade your church for inflammatory remarks that could set people off. And we had elected this right-winger, this white man who wore a cross, by the way, in every presentation. And instead of saying, Allah be praised in some of his speeches, he would say, praise the Lord, bless Jesus, etc. If this extremist right-winger had won the presidency, and we were 6 or 7 years, 6 years into the presidency, and he had enacted the following events, tell me what would be going on in this country. On borders, language, and culture, this extremist right-winger president would uphold the law. He would have put troops on the border with Mexico. He would have started deportation the deportation process, and he would have begun with the 30% of illegal aliens in prisons. He would have started by cleaning out our prisons and deporting them. They would be gone. All the Mexican gangs would be deported out of America. And he would have committed a felony. Who even had a dual citizenship would be thrown out of the country. Anyone who had a gang affiliation from a foreign country would be thrown out of the country. So that's the first thing the extremists would have done. Of course, the New York Times would have had their panties not only in a bunch, but they would be wearing them on their heads, running up and down Fifth Avenue screaming, the house is on fire. Next, language. The extremist right-wing leader by now would have said English is the law of the land. We're not going to permit any voting in any other language, no voter pamphlets in any language but English. Oh, my God! How racist can you get? You see, in San Francisco, the reason Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Nancy Pelosi, and the others continuously get elected, in my opinion, is that they have illegal aliens voting them in. And how do they have it done? They have the ballots are in many languages, 6 to 9 languages, the last I checked. In fact, I have in my hand, I was in the San Francisco city last week, I found this in my mailbox in my apartment. It was in 5 languages. Be a voter. Be a voter. It says City and County of San Francisco Department of Elections. It's in Mandarin. It's in another Chinese language, probably Tagalog. It's in Participe y vote. Esta es inscrito? ? And then you turn it over. And it says register to vote or update your registration with a phone number. So in other words, you can call in and say you're a citizen. On the back, it's in 7 different Asian languages. Then it's in Spanish. Todos los electores inscritos pueden participar en estas elecciones primarias. And then they tell you how you have to register simply by phoning a number to the SF elections. Now, that's how a man in prison who dropped out of the race of Chinese ancestry got almost 300,000 votes, more than all the other people running for the office combined. So it's illegal aliens who have elected this wonderful group of merry pranksters who run San Francisco and run California. And so, again, we go back to a right-winger who won the presidency, my imaginary right-winger, boys and girls. And he says, all ballots in America shall be in English only, period. All business shall only be conducted in English. That's language. Oh, my God, can you imagine the outcry from the racist organization, La Raza, which stands for the race? They changed it, of course, to the acronym rather than the actual words, La Raza. They're one of the most vile racist groups in the country. They stand for only one race supremacy, brown supremacy. They're now advising Obama and have been for 6 years. Now, then the right-winger says culture. This country was built on common cultural values of the U.S. Constitution. No! It can't be constitutionally based. Because it was written by white men. Well, it's based on the Bill of Rights. No! That's white man's tricks. No Bill of Rights. And then, of course, it was also based on the Bible, the Christian Bible. Oh, my God! How can that be? Borders, language, culture. So, in other words, if we had a, quote, extremist right-winger who had won the presidency and only called for those legal principles that I just mentioned, none of which are extremist, by the way, they're all very middle of the road, can you imagine what would be going on in the nation with the retrograde throwbacks that we have in the media, the brainwashed fools who call themselves journalists, what they would be saying? And now, conversely, we have the most extremist, radical, left-wing president imaginable, acting more like a monarch or a king than like a president, who has bypassed the Constitution at least a dozen times. And I don't have to reiterate them for you. He delayed the largest portion of Obamacare, the employer mandate, without the right to do so. He made 22 other similar amendments by executive order. He has granted clemency to thousands of drug dealers contrary to congressional legislation. His administration illegally sold guns to Mexican drug cartels. He released tens of thousands of illegal immigrants from prison, including more than 100 convicted of murder and thousands who have committed rape or assault. This was put together by Lorne Gunter of the Toronto Sun, King Obama Wields His Power. I mean, the latter part, the excesses, not what I did before it. The Obama administration has ordered border agents not to deport any alien ordered expelled by a court. The Obama administration is flooding America with illegal alien children coming in on a fast pass from Central America. The Obama administration turned over five senior Taliban generals from the detention camp at Gitmo in return for the sole U.S. POW of the Afghan war, Bowie Bergdahl. We don't know whether Bergdahl was truly a deserter. We don't know whether his father is an Islamist sympathizer. We don't know whether Bergdahl walked away from his duty because he developed treasonous attitudes about America, but it doesn't matter. He gave up five senior terrorists in the swap, five radicals who will probably return to their terrorist ways. And even middle-of-the-road fake Democrats are making believe they're aghast. This week, the dictator Obama decreed dramatic new restrictions on coal burning for electrical generation. And he did so by using a trick, a technicality in American environmental law, to sneak through this law, the most aggressive regulations of his tenure. And so, as all of us know, he's acting more like a king than a president. And I can't ask you what they would do if it was George Bush. That's an absurd question. I won't ask you anything. I've just tried to explain to you what extremism is at the opening of the Savage Nation. And I'm inviting you to call me today at 855-400-7282. Now, we played Obama, where he makes no apologies. He's doubling down on his despicable behavior while he's safe. Lee ensconced in Europe, where he has a group of sycophantic morons who fly with him on his airplane and laugh at his every whim. But now, shockingly, I should say not so shockingly, Charles Sauerkraut of Fox News, a man I've not been impressed with, I think he's way overrated. Because of his sad demeanor, people think he's intelligent. They confuse his dour looks for intelligence. They think somehow if you're depressed looking, you're smart. But finally, he's shown his true colors, Sauerkraut. He backs the Bergdahl swap in clip two. Neil fired
away. Had the choice been mine, I would have made that same choice. It's a difficult decision, and I would not attack those who would have done otherwise.
Okay, he's always been a double player. Krauthammer's always played for the other side, which is why I affectionately call him Charles Sauerkraut, because of his sour demeanor. So that's what's going on in the country right now. That is exactly what's going on in the country right now, and we have many other topics, and I think that I should invite you to call on the extremist issue because it's novel. There's other stories. Hillary Clinton has demanded the New York Times back off from critical reporting. She met with them, and she told them absolutely what to say. There's many other stories. Central America is reporting that there's encouraging reports being put out in their countries telling them to bring their children to America. And so they're bringing them to America. Taliban commander predicts more kidnappings due to the Bergdahl deal. There are many stories that I'm going to get to on the Savage Nation. As I await your calls, 855-407-282, and my goat cheese pizza, I'll be right back.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
Yep. Come on. I mean, we are grasping at straws now. Is that what the Republicans are resorting to now? We're going to nitpick over the number of prisoners we exchanged. We have, throughout the tenure of many Republican and Democratic presidents, including George W. Bush, including President Nixon, President George W. Bush released 500 detainees from Guantanamo. So, you know, we should not be second-guessing.
Now, that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, not known for intelligence or balance. And while Bush released 500, they were low-level detainees who were arrested for no reason whatsoever. They were just swept up in a dragnet. These are the hardest of the hardcore. So, once again, she's a lying Democrat from Florida, I mean, which is, you know, the land of the hanging Chad. And in my opinion, she belongs in Chad. A woman like her should be deported to Chad. But that would be extremist for me to say that. Her rhetoric belongs in Chad, not in America. And we're talking about extremism. There's another example of a maniac. This is a woman who will say anything to support King Obama. There's nothing he could do. If he interred his political opponents, she would say that we're being extremist and demanding that we not be interred. This is who she is. She's a very dangerous woman. But she's not the issue. It's a nation of problems that we have right now. The Taliban themselves are saying we're inspired to kidnap more. Look at the head of the Drudge Report, where it says, asked whether the Taliban would be inspired by the exchange to kidnap others, a commander laughed and said, definitely. Definitely. He said, definitely. Now, of course, that isn't known by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She only knows how to do the laundry. She knows how to clean Obama's dirty laundry. That's why I call her affectionately Debbie Wasserman Schultz, because what she does for a living is clean Obama's dirty laundry. And here we have the head of the Taliban themselves saying, yes, of course, this is good for us. We're very excited. I'm quoting now. I cannot explain how our people are happy and excited over this unbelievable achievement. This is a historic moment for us. Today, our enemy for the first time officially recognized our status. He goes on and he says, of course, we'll be inspired to kidnap others. He laughed, Debbie. Definitely, says the Taliban commander, Debbie. He says it's better to kidnap one person like Bergdahl than kidnapping hundreds of useless people. It has encouraged our people, Debbie. The Taliban commander said, now everybody will work hard to capture such an important bird. Let's hope that Debbie Wasserman Schultz does not make a visit to Afghanistan, because she may be one of those important birds that they decide would be great for a trade. WABC Anna, fire away on the Savage Nation. We have 30 seconds.
No, this morning on WABC, two talk show hosts said if Israel can release hundreds, sometimes...
Right. I said that yesterday. I was the first one to say it. Here's my answer. We're not Israel. Secondly, what Israel did was wrong, and most Israelis opposed it. And thirdly, I could give a rat's behind what Israel does. We're not Israel.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
We don't keep our opinions to ourselves, and neither should you. On the only conservative station in the
had the air, choice been mine, I would have made that same KSFO. Choice. It's a difficult decision, and I would not attack those who would have done otherwise.
That is the sourpuss on Fox News, Charles Sauerkrauthammer, backing the Bergdahl swap, supporting Obama. And again, many people confuse his sour demeanor for deep thinking, but it's often a mistake. That's like confusing someone who's happy with being stupid. On the other side, I mean, just because a guy looks miserable doesn't mean he's smart. He could be stupid and miserable. So don't jump to conclusion just because he's always unhappy and looks like a weighty guy who has such deep thought. I mean, Charles Krauthammer, ooh. What am I supposed to do, worship the guy? So I've always known he's a wobbly on the other side. Now he's trying to show the side he's on. I mean, yesterday on this show I had Jeanine Pirro, Judge Pirro, how good she was. That's my idea of a broadcaster. Says it like it is, knows what she's talking about, and willing to take risks. Not always waffling, you know what I'm saying? Let's take some callers now. Ethan on WABC, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Savage, how are you?
Sorry, you know I don't answer those questions. We don't know each other, so let's move on. What's your point?
My point is simply that, to my ear, it sounds like you're on the lunatic fringe over there. I'm living in a country.
All right, thank you very much. Now, excuse me, which hedge fund do you work for? Those getting Obama's solar or wind contracts?
I'm not a hedge funder, but I'm a guy who feels like we're living in a much more prosperous and safe...
Well, of course, so which hedge fund do you work for? That's all I'm asking you. Is it a hedge fund that invested in Obama's solar or wind contracts?
I'm not following.
Well, you live in your own bubble. That's why anybody who disagrees with you, who doesn't give you the Upper East Side viewpoint, is considered an extremist. It's because you never, ever go out of New York City and ask people outside New York City what the real world is about. You live in your own bubble. Of course real estate is booming in Manhattan, but it's disconnected from reality. Look at what the average person's living through in America. Look at the price of their Obamacare premiums. Look at the cost of food. I mean, these things don't affect you because you're fat, you're living high on the hog from your hedge fund business.
All right, well, I want to pitch you then my hedge fund. Maybe you'll invest with me.
All right, so what's your next point? You love Obama, and he's doing great, and the country's doing wonderful.
No,
and there's no country west of the Hudson River. But you like the New Yorker cartoon.
Bubble.
You don't. I mean, the rest of the country's flyover country to you, right? A bunch of Goyim with crosses, is that it?
Wow, I thought...
Oh, I got you finally. Gotcha. Know where you're coming from, Bubba.
All right, Bubba. Have fun.
All right, have a nice day. Go talk to your friends in the ACLU. Go smoke a doobie on 6th Avenue. Be a good red diaper doper baby tonight at one of your clubs and tell me how great America's doing under Obama. Go ahead. You know, the only reason an intelligent man like that is listening to me is because he's starting to realize that I may be right and he may not know the whole picture. He says, all right, the guy's a right-wing nut, but I like his accent and he's not, he's willing to say it like it is. Let me think about it. The problem is he lives in a bubble and he doesn't know what goes on west of the Hudson River. He doesn't know what goes on north of, Westchester. The whole world that people in New York live in is a very provincial world, by the way. This is something you don't understand about New Yorkers. They consider themselves great urban dwellers or people of the world. They're extremely provincial. If they live on East 71st Street, they think they're superior to the people who live on East 72nd Street. In fact, if they live on East 71st Street between a certain avenue, they're superior to those on the next avenue over. And so they're extremely provincial in that regard. But that's neither here nor there. They don't know the real world, nor do they care about it. They all were shocked into reality as to the face of radical Islam on 9/11/2001. They realized we had a real enemy. They realized the enemy was radical Islam. But now they've gone to sleep as a result of so many years of brainwashing and so many years of relative peace. They assume that the enemy has gone away. Well, according to the Taliban commander who is cheering Obama's decision to return 5 hardened battlefield commanders to freedom, they are wrong, and let's pray to God there's not another 9/11 to awaken all of the listeners in New York City who are so smug about their freedoms. And by the way, so cynical about the men who died rescuing Bergdahl, the deserter. What do you want to say on the Savage Nation? And I like callers on the other side, by the way. I like people who think I'm an extremist. It makes me feel better. Because as Barry Goldwater, my political mentor and hero, said, Neil, play it again because I think the guy in New York had just awakened. He just awoke.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
See, now he would have been president, but it was stolen by the Democrat machine and given to the wonderful people from Hyannisport, as you well know, and you know how that worked out. 855-407-282 is the phone number. I could ask you a question, but I really don't want to for a number of reasons. We have no room for any callers. Apparently, the show has caught on so rapidly that the tent is full. You know, here's the thing about talk radio. Let me explain it. It's different than other mediums in that it's a daily grind. It's 3 hours a day. Some markets get it for 2, but it's a 3-hour show. I've been doing it for 20 years. This is not my first career, but it is my last career. I'm the author of 28 books. I have a real PhD from the University of California, which I'm extremely, extremely proud of because it's a real PhD as opposed to the type that liberals give to each other. Honorary degrees for donations and whatnot. And I work very hard to achieve what I have. And I have a very, very strict view of the world. Extremely strict view of the world. And the fact is that unless my view of the world comes to be seen as the norm, we're finished as a nation. We'll never survive. And I'll make another statement. What I profess on this show on a daily basis and have done so for 20 years has now been accepted in Europe as for the future of France and England. They have said no to internationalism. They have said no to the EU. They have said no to the abandonment of their own borders, language, and culture. The English voted overwhelmingly 10 days ago, but you wouldn't know that if you simply only read the New York Times, who buried the story. The English and the French just said no to Obama's vision of the world. But we don't have such a chance here in America because we don't have democracy. We have a monopoly. It's a monopoly of two parties who exist solely for their own power and their own money. And we don't have a people's party. Because if we had a parliamentary system in the United States of America, as exists in England, we'd have a full spectrum of parties from the extreme left run by Barack Obama. It would probably be called the People's Labor Party. In other words, if we had a real party that really represents Obama and his merry pranksters, it would be called the People's Liberation Party, the PLP. And it would be under Chairman Obama. And on all the way to the other side, we'd have people representing right-wing views, and we'd have things in the middle, whatever. We'd have a Christian Democrat party. And then the people would have a real choice. Right now, we have no choice. If there was a real choice, we would vote both parties out, and we would also detach ourselves from the disassociation of our own national identity. Did you hear what I just said? From the disassociation of our own national identity. Obama has been desiring to destroy America from the day he became a politically aware. He said he was never proud to be an American. The First Lady said she was only proud to be American when she became the First Lady and could abuse her office as often as she's done. And I say that, by the way, very, very carefully, because I can support it. This is the most abusive presidency in American history, not only politically, but in terms of abuse of power and in terms of abuse of the taxpayer dollar. But that's not the issue. We're way past that. Obama is acting sort of as a rogue president. He's acting on his own behest. He's acting without his own party behind him. How do you feel about that one? How do you feel about Sauerkraut Hammer on Fox News saying that he backs the Bergdahl swap? Let's go back to that one. I think people got lost in the shuffle. They forgot Sauerkraut Hammer's statement in clip two.
Had the choice been mine, I would have made that same choice. It's a difficult decision, and I would not attack those who would have done otherwise.
So Charles Sauerkraut Hammer is now basically a mouthpiece for the Taliban. The Taliban commander said we're inspired to kidnap more people. But I guess that it doesn't affect Charles Sauerkraut Hammer. He could look very dour tonight and very intelligent by looking dour. People could say, well, you know, although I don't agree with his opinion, he's a very bright man. How do you know he's bright? That's like liberals who listen to NPR and they have Vivaldi music playing in the background or some other classical tripe. They think that it's a high-class show because of Vivaldi music. So now we're going to play some Rammstein music to show you what my show's real rhythm is. Neil, let's say we get some Rammstein for all those in New York just awakening up from their medical marijuana stupors, about to go out. Let's see, it's a quarter to four almost in New York. They got up at 3 just to hear my show so they could laugh at it. And somewhere around 5 o'clock when my show ends and their day comes to a conclusion, because they don't have anything left to look forward to, either to reject or rebel against, they'll have to think about cocktails, their second joint of the day. And, of course, it's on to dinner in one of the terrible restaurants in Manhattan. Give me 15 minutes, infidels, and I'll give you America. I'm feeling good again today. I just had a goat cheese pizza. I'm waiting for the reaction. Hold it. I'm doing another experiment, by the way, on the Savage Nation to debunk the issue of gluten, which everyone in Manhattan is sure is. To them, gluten is a greater enemy than the Taliban. Like that caller, anyone who lives on the Upper East Side of Manhattan thinks that gluten is a greater threat to their personal safety than the Taliban are. And so they eschew gluten at every turn in every one of their foods. And as I showed you 2 weeks ago, the scientist who originally blew the whistle on gluten said he was mistaken, that there is a much smaller number of people who are actually sensitive to gluten. It was a mistake. But that didn't filter out to the New York Times because it's a big industry now. I am performing an experiment, though, on the Savage Nation as you listen. I have just eaten 4 slices of goat cheese pizza in an experiment to see what effects gluten will have upon my psyche and my body. It's been 5 or 6 minutes now, and thus far, there are no effects. My knuckles are working. There's no clicking. Let's see. The hands are operating completely fine. I don't feel dizzy. I don't feel faint. I don't feel bloated. We're going to keep monitoring the effects of the gluten pizza, the rich gluten pizza on the Savage Nation as the time goes on. And at the end of the show, I hope you go down to Katz's restaurant at the end of the show or other deli of a choice and have a fat corned beef sandwich on club for me. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I'm in an extremely good mood. The thing is, I'm not going to agonize over the dictatorship that's emerging. You know, living well is the best revenge, and eating a goat pizza and a salad for lunch isn't so bad, even though they overcharged me here in the Bay Area. Everything is so special. You know, artisan tomatoes and special lettuce that comes from, God knows. Everything's just so special in San Francisco. But I feel good. Maybe I just don't care at a certain point. In other words, if the president doesn't care, why should I care? I'll tell you like it is, and you'll have to decide what you're going to do come November. I mean, really, what can you do? You can vote them out. You could throw the bums out who are running for office. That's all you could do. And we have, what we have is a dictatorship punctuated by democracy every 4 to 8 years. That's about it. We don't have the choice that they have. The choices that they have, for example, in a parliamentary system are much different. Is that if they had an Obama, they could call for a vote overnight and they could throw him out. I can guarantee you there'd be a vote of no confidence if it were held in the next 3 weeks and the mayor would be dismissed from office. But we don't have that, and he knows that. He's taking advantage of the system the same way he and his wife take advantage of Air Force One and Two and the largesse of the White House budget. And so, what can I do? I point out what's going on, and that's it. I'm not going to eat my guts out day and night. I wouldn't be alive if I did it every second. I do it enough. Some nights I can't sleep. Lately, I've been sleeping well. I'm going on vacation tomorrow. I shouldn't have told you that. We have great fill-ins for a couple of days, but I'm going somewhere. I'm not going to tell you where till I come back. I feel like a child getting ready for summer camp, actually Boy Scout camp. I got the knife out, the compass. I can smell the canvas of the webbing that I'm taking to the 10-Mile River Scout camp. I got the hat, the uniform, the badges. I can smell the pines already, even though I'm not going. You know what I'm saying? It's like a child. So what I do on every trip is it harkens back to the years I was a young boy. And my mom would pick me up in school in the Bronx and take me out early on Thanksgiving and many other weekends, and we'd go to Penn Station and take a train out to our relatives in Pennsylvania. Those are the fondest memories of my life. Some of the fondest memories are those train rides coming out of Penn Station, where we'd go in an electric locomotive out of Penn Station, and we'd switch in New Jersey to a coal-driven. Remember, in those days, they could still run a coal-driven locomotive in New Jersey to Pennsylvania. It was a Lehigh Railroad, I think. I love the smoke. What did the kid know? In fact, I would sometimes open the window just to inhale the black smoke. And my mother would say, what, are you crazy? Close the window, you'll get sick. I said, no, Ma, it smells nice. Kids don't know. They can inhale ash. They think it's funny. I'd get the ham sandwiches and the white bread, the porters. It was nice. But I would always buy magazines at Penn Station for the railroad, for the ride on the train. In those days, I actually was enamored. It shows you what a nut I was, even as a kid. I would buy guns and ammo. Even as a young child, I loved guns. Would you imagine that? How extremist can that be? How could a boy from Queens, from the Bronx, born in the Bronx, have love guns? I don't know. I just did. Did I tell you that I was on the rifle team at Jamaica High School in the late 50s? Did you know they had a rifle team? And they had a rifle range in the basement of the high school? And guess what, boys and girls? No one ever shot themselves. No one ever ran through the halls with the Mossberg 22s and shot any other child. How is that possible? Well, all of our teachers were returning military veterans. That's number one. Almost every one of them had served in Korea or World War II. And they were real men, and we respected them. And they taught us to respect guns. Number two, none of us were on drugs. The doctors were doctors, not drug peddlers then. And they didn't drug kids who had a little jumpiness to them. And so I'd buy magazines, as I was saying, for that train ride. And now as I'm getting ready for the trip tomorrow, I bought a bunch of magazines, and here they are. What does Michael's magazines look like? Here is the geography of his mind. I got Flying Magazine from May 2014. I got the Quarterly Journal of Military History, Who Lost the War, Hitler or His Generals. Ooh, what is that implying? I got the DuPont Registry. I got Sea Power, which is the magazine of the Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marine. I got Classic and Sports Car. I got Warships International Fleet Review. I got Architectural Digest. And I got Southern Voting. That's all. Little tapestry here of where my head's at.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I've always said that the there's a biblical root and a tradition in this country that says we don't hold children liable for their parents' acts. And when you have kids who may have been brought here, let's say, at 2 months old, unbeknownst to them, and they've been here all their lives, and they want to serve in our military, my position is then I agree with that principle. They should be allowed to serve in our military.
That's Eric Cantor. You know, there were times that a guy like him would have had Cantor's Deli somewhere in Virginia. We would have had a better world. But now the man's a big shot. He says it's biblical to permit, I guess, hundreds of thousands or millions of illegal alien children to become citizens. I don't understand these people. Look, if he had been a deli man running Cantor's Deli and had hairy forearms and hairy knuckles and spoke with a slight Eastern European accent and he had an opinion like that, you'd say, all right, he's a commie left-winger. That's what they all think. But no, that's Eric Cantor now, big shot, very important man. It's biblical now, according to him, to permit our borders to be fractured by Obama and have the nation overrun by, it'll probably be hundreds of thousands of children. Have you seen the pictures of the children coming in from Honduras and Guatemala? Have you seen the pictures? Some of them are 18 years old. I mean, they're not children. These are the armies of the night that the left have dreamed of for years. This is the army of the night for 5 to 10 years from now. Yeah, it's a great time to be in America. But as I say to you, there's only so much you can say and only so much you can do, which is why I drifted off into telling you about an upcoming trip without telling you where I'm going and what magazines I'll be reading on the plane. Not that you're interested. I'm just telling you because those of you who have followed the show for 20 years are interested. I'm sort of a family member. And you'd like to know what I'm doing. And I used to call this Cafe Savage in the afternoons. The years I was on in the afternoon on the West Coast, I'd have a cafe sound of clinking cups, clinking glasses. And I said, why don't you consider me as a guy who owns a cafe? I'm behind the counter, and it's my cafe. It's my rules. And you can talk, but only up to a point. After which, if I don't like what you say, I'll ask you to leave the cafe, or I'll have my someone escort you out of the door. That really is what talk radio is about. It's sort of a bar. Yeah, that's not French Cafe. No. Not Charles, whatever. Because he was a deviant. I mean, that guy was. If you listen to the songs he sang, they were all very, very risque. Every little breeze seems to whisper Louise is one thing. But when he did the little girl song, I mean, this guy was a pedo. Who was the guy that the little girl, every little girl? The guy was a pedo. Today would have been slapped into the slammer. I guess that was the norm for France in the 50s. I don't really know what it was like. I wasn't there at that time. Okay, what would you like to talk about in the Savage Nation? I got some great callers. Don't think I'm groping for calls here. And we could talk further about what is an extremist, but I think we've done that. We think that we can talk about the Bergdahl thing, but it's behind us. Nothing's going to happen. The Republicans are just blowing hot air. As you well know, they're just trying to triangulate your emotions and let you think that they're on your side. They'll huff and they'll puff and they'll blow their own house down, as far as I'm concerned. Guys like Rubio, McCain, you know, whatever Obama does, they'll huff and they'll puff and they'll blow their own house down. It's as simple as that. And so what's left for us to talk about? I don't know. I could talk about many things. I don't know what I want to talk about. Maybe vacations. Maybe a thesaurus. My favorite books. Maybe I should talk about my favorite book. You know, one of my favorite reference books is, it's not trying to sound smart. I'm not trying to pull a crowd hammer on you. I've told you this for years now, is The Origin of Words is one of my hobbies. So I have in my hand at all times a book by Skeet, Concise Etymological Dictionary of the English Language. Ooh, is that intelligent or what? Well, I bought this book in graduate school a long time ago. And what it does, it shows you the roots of many words. So if you look up the word liberal in Skeet's Etymological Dictionary of the English Language. You might be surprised what a liberal actually is. I think the word is used, by the way, in the wrong manner here. You can't call Obama liberal by any means. He's an extremist by any definition. And the word liberal itself has no meaning anymore in the country. It's been used too many times. I have to take responsibility for that because of my many New York Times bestsellers. My most, I would say the most mirthfully true was liberalism is a mental disorder. Because many people come up to me when they recognize me and they say, Michael, have you seen what Feinstein did? I don't know, understand why she would do a thing like that. I don't understand it. They're trying to use logic or reason. Or have you heard what Obama did? Why would he do a thing like that? I said, try this formula. Liberalism is a mental disorder. In other words, if you plug that statement into any one of your puzzling questions about so-called radicals or liberals, it answers the question sort of in an obtuse way. There's no other explanation for what they do. And I think it has to do with the fact that many of them are drugged. I sincerely believe they're on medication. There's every reason to believe they're on medication, since most of America seems to be medicated, whether it be with serotonin reuptake inhibitors or whatever. They're medicated, and they're not thinking clearly. See, if you work for a corporation, you have to pee in a cup, don't you? Of course you do. You have to take a drug test, because nobody wants an impaired worker in a major American corporation. That's reserved only for the executives who run the corporation. But it's the same with our Congress. See, I would think that we should have a drug test for every member of Congress. All 400 members, including the president, should have to pee in a cup, and that we, the people, should then see the drug test. And we'd see if they're on Prozac or on some other drugs, and we could possibly understand some of their behavior or their inactivities. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? All right, we've done that. I can do some readings today from some of my books, but instead I think what we're going to do is this. Back in the distant past of 2007, Neil, I won the Talkers Magazine Freedom of Speech Award. I think it was 07 or 09. It was 09, right after I was banned in England. And I really regret having been banned in England, by the way. I'm still banned in England. I'm the only member of the American media not able to go to England for words I never even said by the racist, extremist Labour government of the time. And as I said, I'd love to go to England. I love the English people. And I really look forward to getting to England one of these days so I can get some great dental work and some great cuisine. But until those days, I'll have to get along with the dental work and cuisine I can get over here in San Francisco. But when I won the Freedom of Speech Award, I gave a little speech for the Talkers Magazine convention. And here is this speech, because it has a lot to do with the way I run my show, which is, well, listen in. Tell me what you think. Radio is in a more perilous state today than it's been in its entire history. And that is because, as I speak with you, it is happening here. Congressman Fazio of Oregon and others are circulating a bill in Congress for the so-called fairness doctrine. What it means is people such as Michael Savage will no longer be able to speak freely. Is that not dictatorship, the fairness doctrine? Of course it is. It's just that we use fancy rhetoric in this country as opposed to police power. But make no mistake about it, the fairness doctrine is censorship, and it has no place in the United States of America. Now let me give you some examples, if I may, about the power of freedom of speech and talk radio. Al Gore, for example, in my opinion, lies when he preaches that all scientists now agree that global warming is caused by human activity. If I refute Gore's lies on the airwaves by quoting numerous prominent scientists who refute Gore's hysterical con, I am using freedom of speech granted to us by the United States Constitution to do so. If radical environmental folks were to make it a crime to deny global warming, you've heard that. They say they want to make it a crime to deny global warming. Such refutations as mine and those of prominent scientists would be banished from the discussion. By the way, I'm reading my own script. I wrote this in Los Angeles. I don't have a teleprompter. That's freedom of speech. I remember the 1960s when true liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. When have you last heard liberals say, oh, I may disagree with conservative talk radio, but I would fight to the death their right to say what they believe in? I don't hear that anymore. What instead I hear is their threats to national security. That was stated on the congressional floor by Congressman Hinchey. He says, I'm a threat to national security, and he's trying to pass the so-called fairness doctrine to close down freedom of speech. Is that liberalism? Liberals used to say, I may disagree with you, Michael Savage, but I would fight to the death your right to say it. That's what this country has been about from the day it was founded.
That's the trail of tears and the trail of blood that led to the freedoms that we enjoy in this country today. And we cannot permit a few small-minded martinets who don't even know that they're inhabiting the souls of dictatorships in Congress right now to deny us our freedom of speech. Where are the true good liberals?
I want to define satire, ridicule, and sarcasm for those of you who love talk radio. Satire is the use of irony, sarcasm, ridicule, or the like in exposing, denouncing, or deriding vice, folly, etc. What is ridicule? We use it on talk radio all the time if we know how. It is speech or action intended to cause contemptuous laughter at a person or thing. Derision. Derision, my friends, is ridicule. That's part of freedom of speech. And finally, sarcasm should be used all the time if you know how to do it. What is sarcasm? Harsh or bitter derision or irony. A sharply ironical taunt, sneering or cutting remark, a review full of sarcasms. That's freedom of speech, my friends.
When I offend doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans, yes, I don't limit my criticism to the Democrats or the liberals. When I offend doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans by pointing out that there are now more contractors than U.S. soldiers in Iraq, whose freedoms am I denying? The freedoms of the military-industrial complex to rob the public? The freedoms of the warmongers who refuse to either win definitively or leave? Eisenhower warned us, beware the military-industrial complex. I've played that on my show over and over again. Who am I criticizing, Democrats or Republicans? I'll let you decide. When I state that our Army and Marine heroes are being sent in to fight door-to-door and suffer and die, and then be given court-martials if they do their job a little too well, because Bush is either the most, I don't know, hesitant or incompetent commander-in-chief in the United States history, whose freedoms am I denying? President Bush said he will not have politicians telling our generals how to conduct the war. Well, I wonder, is he not a politician telling generals how to conduct a war? No war has ever been conducted like this. And when I call illegal aliens invaders who must be forced to deport themselves, and I present the social and fiscal drain of this invading army of illegal aliens, whose freedoms am I denying? Who am I offending? The doctrinaire knee-jerk Republicans or the Democrats? Probably both. When I, Michael Savage, support my position for borders, language, and culture, do I deny my fellow citizens their rights to redress their grievances to a government all too eager to continue to flood our nation with cheap laborers? When I present the fact that 30% or one of three prisoners in federal lockups is an illegal alien who doesn't belong here to begin with, do I deny or do I grant my fellow U.S. citizens their right to speak freely through me, a talk show host? When I detail the epidemic of drunk driving and vehicular homicides being inflicted on this country by brazen illegal aliens who are deported only to return and drive drunk again, drive and kill again, I surely do not deny my fellow Americans their freedom of speech or their right to redress their grievances, do I? So whose rights am I offending? Certain special interests, I would assume. Well, that's not my problem. If these and other like opinions of mine were mine alone, I would not have risen to this position I now enjoy in the world of the spoken and written word. In fact, I am the voice of the voiceless, who have been marginalized and silenced by the illiberal liberals who control virtually all avenues of images and ideas that the world sees. All the images and ideas, with the limited exception of conservative talk radio, the most vulnerable medium, now under attack by the new National Socialists, who would ban free speech that they disagree with by threatening corporate sponsors through extortionist means of false boycotts, using different techniques, but wanting to achieve the same ends as all dictatorships, such as Venezuela. That is total control of speech, which is the opposite of freedom of speech.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. Hey, you.
You just heard my Freedom of Speech Award, which is, you know why I'm called the boss in talk radio. I mean, there are bigger audiences, but truthfully, most of the ideas that you're hearing come from my large oeuvre, my great body of work over the last 20 years. I want to go back to one of them now because I'm in that kind of mood, from a book I did in 06. No, I'm not selling a book. It's not even available, called The Political Zoo. And what I did here was I eviscerated people on both sides of the aisle, ranging from left to right. But I dedicated it as follows, quote, The true end of satire is the amendment of vice by correction. And he who writes honestly is no more an enemy to the offender than the physician to the patient when he prescribes harsh remedies to an inveterate disease, John Dryden, 1681. And that's because in those days they hung you if you criticized the politicians. They quartered you, something along the lines of what Harry Reid would like to do to his critics. But today, apparently, you still have a little freedom of speech, so we use it as best we can. So in the political zoo, given my background in biology, I took a person's name, I gave them a mock name, and then I gave them a mock Latin binomial, you know, genus and species, right? For example, the first one's Alec Baldwin, No Talentus Anti-Americanus, and his mock name is the Santa Monica Stuffed Turkey, is a corpulent bird with an increasingly thick wattle. And then I go into him. I'm not going to talk about him. He's irrelevant right now. Pelosi's in here. But then people said to me, why don't you make an updated version of the political zoo and put in Obama and Chris Christie, people on the left and right who need to be put into the political zoo. So I said, well, okay, here's what I would do. I'll put in Chris Christie, and his name would be Rotundas Bridges Too Faris, the big round bridge too far. I'd put in Joe Biden, Crack Potus Over Bidius. I'd put Valerie Jarrett in the book, and her name would be Iranian Plantus. Mitt Romney would go in there as Nice Gaius Phallus. Marco Rubio would be in there, Double Talkus Ice Creamanus. John Boehner would go into the book as Clinkus Meltus, the melted ice cube. I used to run an ice cube in the glass. John Boehner, Clinkus Meltus, the melted ice cube. Ted Cruz would go into the political zoo as Coffea America's Blandus, the bland American coffee bean. I'd have to put Eric Cantor in as Bagelus Stalus, the stale bagel. And then Ann Coulter would be in the book as Screechus Righteous. I'm sorry for nothing I just said. I'm sorry we just ran out of time so I couldn't skewer some more people. when I come back, we'll deal some more with the political zoo. John Kerry, Flipper Floppus. The Flipper family of toothless dolphins luxuriate in the protected coves of Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard in the south of France.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
If you're not going to discuss the issues, there's no reason for you to be in talk radio.
You may as well continue to do stand-up on Fox News.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. It's 34 KSFO. Minutes after the hour. You know, tomorrow is going to be the celebration of the invasion of Normandy, D-Day, that is. And, of course, our fearless leader is over there to try and wrap himself in the greatest generation. No doubt he'll have you believe he was personally there. And when others speak in foreign languages, you'll notice he'll look at them and nod as though he understands Polish, German, French, perhaps even Russian. That's one of his favorite stunts, which is looking over and nodding along, sort of like a child in a synagogue who doesn't know Hebrew but hums along. Obama sort of nods along when foreign dignitaries speak on the same dais and make believe he understands them. But nevertheless, since tomorrow is the anniversary of the D-Day invasion, one of the greatest, you talk about organization, I've never seen anything like it. Look, it's not my specialty, but I'm a student of history. It's one of my hobbies. And if you look at the logistics of D-Day, it's hard to believe anybody could have organized this. Genius. And as you well know, we had a great commander-in-chief at that time in Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who had no military experience, but obviously a great mind of great organizational mind. And then we had the luck to have great generals. But what I found in my library was something that's going to shock you. It's the Army and Navy Song and Service Book for Ship and Field. And it's prayers for the boys who were going to go and risk their lives, many of whom lost their lives. Prayers on the battlefield, songs to sing. It's hard to believe how far we have fallen over these last decades that the young men are not even allowed to pray anymore. Even if they're facing mortal combat, they can't pray because of the KGB elements that have been introduced into our military. There are such hymns in here, I can't read them all to you, but things such as a simple thing that you may have sung in grade school, My Country, Tis of Thee. I bet you still remember that. A hymn. My country, tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. Amen. Simple song, right? Gone now. Gone with the wind. Now it has to be Dorothy marries Harriet, or Harry meets Billy, as a song that they're allowed to sing in front of their fake chaplains. And then, of course, they're coming up and ginning up the fake molestation stories for the military in order to drive as many men out as fast as possible. Even the Blue Angels have been touched by the big lie of the radical feminazis who've taken over this military of ours under Obama. Did you hear what they did to the Blue Angels? You haven't heard that one. I found the story last night. My hair stood up. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I have to find this story. I want to go past Bergdahl and the Taliban, and there it is, manhunt in Canada for shooter who killed three officers, immigrants bringing deadly diseases to Florida. Here we go. Witch hunt by Radfems destroys Blue Angel leadership is my headline. They have created a false narrative that the Blue Angels commander, you know how talented these men are, was attacked by the lousy, stinking, low-life feminazis in the military and disciplined for so-called ignoring lewd and crude conduct, and they're trying to drive one of our finest pilots out of the Blue Angels themselves. In fact, they did. The lousy, stinking, left-wing vermin in the military under Obama have taken Captain Gregory McWhirter from his command officer post to the Blue Angels after a witch hunt by these feminine nasties determined that he allowed a frat boy culture to permeate the air show squadron. I swear to God. I swear to God, this is what's going on in the military. They will not be happy until our men are unable to fly planes at all. These feminasties will not stop until no one can fly an airplane. They'd rather have the airplanes grounded than have a man with a real, with real manhood in the military. Let's put it to you that way. And so I say, look how far we've fallen from the song and service book for ship and field. Men acting like men and saying things they want to say. They still have to get up in those planes and fly them. What's the difference what the heck they say? What do I care what a Blue Angel says off duty or in a locker room? What do I care? As long as you can fly that jet 3 feet from the next jet. What do I care what some stupid fat feminasty from Harvard has to say? And yet, they are now the equivalent of the KGB. And I want to remind you of something. During the Cold War, when the Soviet Union was vying with America, for example, on aboard a Soviet submarine, there would be a KGB officer, usually a woman, whose sole purpose was to act as a spy for the state. And if anyone exhibited any, by word or statement or whatever, any kind of grumbling about Stalin or about the state, the Soviet Union, she would report that individual to the Politburo, and he would usually be taken off the ship and punished accordingly, according to the crime that he allegedly committed. We have now become the equivalent of the Soviet Union with replacing the KGB officers with the sexual harassment brigades inside the military. He did nothing wrong. They had an investigation. He did nothing. All he did was talk in a sexually charged conversation on one occasion. Did you hear what I just said? And they threw him off the Blue Angels. He was the commander of the Blue Angels. And this is what's going on now under Obama. There's a rape of the military going on, a total rape going on of our most, our bravest fighting men. A rape of our military is going on right in front of our eyes, but we don't even see what's going on. And I compare what's going on today under these KGB women to the days of a song and service book for ship and field, Army and Navy. I cannot believe what I'm looking at. Would you believe they even had the Ten Commandments in here? They had God Bless America in here as a song for the men to sing. Could you believe that they used to sing hymns and songs like this? Could you believe they could mention the word Jesus without being called out by the feminasties? Could you believe that a man could face life and death and have a faith in his church, for example, and not be punished for it at a time when we were the greatest nation with the greatest military? And the reason I point this out to you is to show you how far we have fallen under this community organizer, this left-wing, anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-family, anti-military leader that we have in the White House. And so the book begins with Washington's Prayer for the Nation. and lead kindly light. I mean, it's amazing. I look at this book. I just don't know how this country goes on. So last night for a light reading, I couldn't sleep last night again. I try to sleep around midnight. I got out a book I've been trying to read for a few years on the invasion of Italy in World War II, particularly the Battle at Anzio, which was a little known battle by most Americans, one of the most vicious battles, you know, of World War II. It was not house to house. It was room to room. It was brick to brick. It was Americans versus Germans with knives and bayonets, with their teeth and their claws and their hands and their guns. That's what the boys had to face. And I say, my God, look where we've fallen, what we've become today, that a president would glorify a deserter and release five Nazi commanders from the opposite side just for a little tiny measly political gain for the moment. I said, my God, how does this country survive? At the same time, he's flooding America with what will be several hundred thousand, if not millions, of non-citizen children to become the future armies of the night for the left-wing revolution that is seriously underway in this country. Well, those are some of the darker thoughts I had, which is why I went through a lighter moment here on the Political Zoo. And I could go back to the lighter moment, but actually I'm no longer in the mood. I mean, if I start joking around now, it'll diminish what I just said to you. But maybe I should joke around, at least read one of them to you. How about one? Dianne Feinstein, she's always good for a joke. Here it is. I named her the Frisco Red Heron, and her Latin binomial was Mao Zedongus. The Frisco Red Heron is a standout bird known for its heroic migration. The famed long flight from the Bay Area to the Chinese homeland during the annual August congressional recess to meet up with its mate. In China, it is known as the hidden dragon heron and is kept as a pet by many higher-up Chinese Communist Party officials. The red heron is particularly possessive about its privacy and property and can regularly be spotted clucking for its collectivist cousins, though it readily invades all other birds' habitats as it feels necessity warrants. Then I start with the following. Gulfstream liberals have their own congressional caucus headed by one of their own, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California. As one of the wealthiest birds in this well-appointed aviary, the red heron sits on her gilded political perch, preaching to the lowly, unwashed masses of American mammals, promising to make our meager and meaningless lives better and safer. And aren't we all grateful? The red heron's policies are not surprisingly socialist, marked by odd occasional moments of lucidity. When she isn't playing useful idiot for her husband's Chinese government partners, she still closely follows the Democratic Party flock, breaking with them on the rarest of moments when reason, logic, and pure political self-interest crash down on her like a rickety building in a 9.0 earthquake. The red heron can appear at times to be hawkish and sometimes patriotic, like her performance immediately after 9/11. However, she can easily turn dove, but never a lonesome one, as she is a creature of the flock and will fly wherever the prevailing wind and its flighty ideology take it. Similarly, she can boldly champion her fascist principles and then turn around and make believe she never said any such thing. It's not easy being a useful idiot. It takes discipline, balance, and the brain of a bird. One additional role that she plays is stool pigeon. According to an investigation by the Los Angeles Times, Feinstein was pushing the Clinton administration for dropping trade restrictions on China at exactly the same time that her husband was increasing his financial investments there. They assured everyone that there was a strict firewall between her foreign policy positions and his equity positions in China. But this firewall is not the Great Wall of China, seeing as how Dick Blum has repeatedly traveled with Feinstein to China, and her prestige as a U.S. senator has opened many doors for her husband to the highest levels of the communist Chinese government. Since Feinstein entered the Senate, Blum's China portfolio has grown from $500,000 to $2 to $3 billion today. By the way, that was 10 years ago. What a coincidence. Maybe he took Hillary's class in cattle futures trading. Just how many American lawmakers and their foreign investment banker spouses do you think have slept in Mao's old bed at the invitation of the Chinese president? And we thought that Democrats were just selling out in the Lincoln bedroom. We knew that once again the Clintons were just imitating China, didn't we? The Red Heron took the side of the Chinese in 2001 when one of their fighter pilots... Well, you get the picture. Some of this is a little out of date. But I'll conclude at the end of my entry on Dianne Feinstein before we go to our next break on the Savage Nation. The Red Heron Feinstein is also notoriously anti-Second Amendment. In 1995, she famously declared on 60 Minutes, about her attempts to ban firearm ownership. She said, if I could have gotten 51 votes in the Senate of the United States for an outright ban, picking up every one of them, Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in, I would have done it. Well, at least she's honest about her intent. If it works in China, why not here? First off, hasn't Feinstein heard of this thing called the Constitution and the section within called the Second Amendment? The Constitution isn't like an elevator that skips the 13th floor, Diane. Every one of the amendments matter. Isn't it instructive how certain senators choke when a judicial nominee mentions anything about the original intent? But when it comes to the Second Amendment, they are suddenly fluent on colonial militias and the war for independence. If only they actually cared about original intent. One other curiosity. Whenever the Red Heron speaks about gun control, she skips over the fact that she herself has a concealed carry permit and likes to pack heat. If the California cackle hen merely hires armed guards, the Red Heron is a regular pistol-packing mama. Thank God she spares us helots from the danger. Thank God she spares us helots from the danger and responsibility of carrying a gun. How could we ever manage? Now let me go to the last piece on Dianne Feinstein and the Politburo that she seems to run out here in California. That's not even half of it. Given the Red Heron's attempts to ban alcohol on all U.S. airlines, to force federal officials to purchase guns from her preferred foreign suppliers, Chinese as you might expect, to publicly call the U.S. an environmental slacker while driving around in one of her five SUVs, or to oppose judicial nominees because they're too serious about a religious faith other than Wiccan, we ought to be lucky that the Red Heron and her left-wing friends have left us with any freedoms at all. After all, who needs constitutional niceties? The fleeced flock is a much better paradigm for a Democrat's ideal America. That's Michael's entry on Dianne Feinstein and the Political Zoo, Mao Zedongus, the Frisco Red Heron. When I come back, maybe a little bit more, the next one will be Hillary Clinton, the limber leopard, her Latin binomial being Peronista manipulatus. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Look, the big story to me is what the feminasties did to the Blue Angels. They threw out the commander of the Blue Angels through an investigation which said that he allowed a frat boy climate to permeate the ranks of the Blue Angels. I don't understand how you can sit there in this country and not see what Obama's minions and his feminasties are doing to our military. They are taking it apart by the joints. They are destroying it to the point where not only will no one ever enlist again, they will be unable to fly a plane or to steer a yacht, to steer a boat. And I don't know how this ends. I don't know how this ends. I have a very, very bad feeling about it, but I know it's on purpose. It's not by accident. Margo on WABC, you'll be our last caller in this hour. Fire away.
Hi. The president in the TV show 24, which was very popular for a while, and I think it had a comeback recently, that president reminds me of Obama because he was a traitor to the country, just as I feel Obama is.
I feel that the character in Homeland, the man who had been captured by Al-Qaeda and was in prison for a number of years and came back, remember, a war hero, and then he ran for Congress in the city. You've seen Homeland on HBO? No, I guess not, but that one is the most closely approximate of Obama. Obama looks to me like someone working for the other side. You say, well, how can you prove it? I can't prove it, but I would say that the burden of proof is on those of you who don't want to accept the fact that virtually everything he does aids and abets our enemies. In other words, if you're debasing the military on a daily basis, cutting their budgets, reducing the number of men in the military to a level of that of 1940, while Russia and China are arming at an alarming rate, and at the same time you're dismissing men who are running the Blue Angels on trumped-up charges and firing many generals, which is all in my book, by the way, The Coming Civil War, coming out in October, then the man seems to me the same as someone working for the other side. And so what difference does it make at the end of the day?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is The Savage Nation. Hour number three, rolling around before my big vacation. Big vacation. Couple of days anyway. I'm looking forward to it like a kid about to take off for the summer. It's only a few days, but the truth is, the firing of the commander of the Blue Angels by the feminasties for doing nothing other than being a great pilot, Obama cavorting with the enemy, releasing five enemy generals, celebrating a defector as though he's a hero. I mean, it's getting worse by the second, and I can't eat my heart out every day. Then we have the shock of Charles Sauerkrauthammer backing the Bergdahl swap, and I'm not surprised by that. Charles Sauerkrauthammer gets away with an awful lot owing to his sour demeanor. People confuse his sour demeanor with deep thinking, but he's never fooled me, not for a minute. He really should be working for CNN. And, I mean, I don't expect anything else from him. So that's not a big deal. Obama not apologizing for the Bergdahl swap. Did you hear that one yet? You got to listen to this. He's doubling down now on his dastardly act in clip one. Neil, let's play it for those listening.
I'm never surprised by controversies that are whipped up in Washington. Right? That's
little children laughing.
That's par for the course.
Sure.
But I'll repeat what I said 2 days ago. We have a basic principle. We do not leave anybody wearing the American uniform behind.
How about the Marine in Mexico?
We had a prisoner of war.
He was not a prisoner of war. He was a defector.
Whose health had deteriorated.
That's a lie. Everyone's saying that's a lie.
And we were deeply concerned about it.
A lie.
An opportunity, and we
a lie.
And I make no apologies for that.
No, you shouldn't make any apologies because you're above the law and you're above apologies. Here's an example of a narcissist that's completely out of control, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. It doesn't matter that Obama's foreign policy approval ratings have hit the lowest point of his regime, time in office. Nothing matters to him. He's living in his own world. He's living in his own bell jar. This is the mark of if I said narcissist, it doesn't mean anything anymore. I would say he's mad. By all definition, Obama's a madman. I don't know what else to say about it. If you have a president who's supposed to represent the American people, who is supposed to bring the members of Congress together, after all, what does Congress mean? It's a congregation of differing opinions that is somehow unified in a president who listens to both sides and comes up with a compromise that makes sense that everyone can live with. He doesn't do that. He's a madman. Do you understand that he's a madman by definition? Do I mean he's running down the street screaming no? But he's a madman. He's so out of the ken of American political tradition that he's literally a madman. And we're in deep trouble. He's doing what he wants, and no one's stopping him. The biggest problem is not Bergdahl. The far bigger problem is what he did the night of the Bergdahl announcement. He demanded $1.4 billion for La Raza to feed, house, clothe the 100,000 or more illegal alien children, some of whom are 18 years old and can easily wield an AK-47 if need be, sitting in Air Force bases and military bases along the southern border and in Arizona. How in the world can this be going on that the man could bypass Congress without an immediate call for an impeachment? How? Because the Republicans tacitly want the same things he does. That's how. It's a one-party system. Don't be so shocked. You got Eric Cantor, the stale bagel, bagelus stalus, saying that it's godly, it's biblical to welcome in the illegal aliens. Now, no one can argue that all illegal aliens are bad people. No one can argue that because I'm the son of an immigrant. I understand what an immigrant is. However, there's a big difference between those who come here to work and those who come here to work the system. There's a big difference between those who are law-abiding citizens and the 30% of prisoners who have committed numerous felonies. There's a big difference between saying all immigrants come here to work and bringing in over 100,000 children who are not coming here to work but to work the system. Of course Obama will say there's no apology for the Bergdahl experience because he's not even in America while he says it. He's surrounded by the press corps that flew with him on Air Force One, who applauded and giggled at it, at his saying, like he's a cheerleader. I never heard anything like this. So that's the problem right now. What planet does he live on is an old statement. I wouldn't even say what planet he lives on. I know what planet he lives on. He lives on planet Mars. That's the planet he lives on. KSFO, George, San Francisco, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it's good to hear you. I'm actually in Dallas listening on KSFO. Based on what you talked about yesterday, I want to know if you had a thought of the movie. I know you like movies a lot. V for Vendetta. And
I'm not familiar with the movie. So what's the reference?
The reference is that there's an ongoing theme that the archetype, the main character, is leading everyone down a road that he knows the end to, and no one else realizes what's going to happen. And it dawned on me is that Obama is that character. Everything you're citing is leading down a road. It's quickening down a road to some ultimate goal or event.
Okay, so what do you think this ultimate tragedy will be?
I don't really want to think about it, but I think it's going to be massive.
So do I, and that's why I've been working feverishly around the clock, almost to the point of nervous collapse until last week, on my forthcoming book, Stop the Coming Civil War, because I do believe they're going to commit some acts of provocation to cause rebellions in this country so they can crush the rebellions, declare martial law, and seize our guns.
I think the Civil War you're talking about, that's not even the ultimate goal. That's the step, one of the large steps to the ultimate goal. But I think that is on the roadmap, and that's where this is all quickening.
Well, so what could the more ultimate goal be? What, having waking up one day and finding out the Chinese generals are running the country?
Yeah, and divide and conquer sense. I mean, if you actually study, you know, what happened with the Germans and Russians in World War II, there was a three-way civil war going on once Germany invaded, and that caused complete chaos in the Ukraine and that area, because it wasn't just Germans fighting Russians, it was the Ukrainians fighting both the Germans and the Russians.
Well, but remember, Obama has brought an invading army into this country with his open-door policy to Mexico and the southern nations. The fact of the matter is he is bringing in an invading force into this country.
Right,
and you may say, well, you may say they're not armed and they're not conducting a civil war, they're not attacking the citizenry. I would argue that the one-third of prisoners who are of foreign origin, who are not citizens, would indicate that not all of them are just simply here to cut lawns and cut hair.
Right, they're here for a reason. It's a long-term reason, and it's the way these events are piling up quicker and quicker with Bergdahl coming home, then the children bombarding the borders.
Do you remember when the Muslim terrorists were doing what was called, what would they call that, where they would go on airplanes and all jump up at once, a test flight or a, what was that called? Not, Neil, do you know what I'm talking about? When they would all jump up and scream Allah Akbar and then not do anything? It was a, what would they call, like a probe, a test, remember? There was a name for it. I think Obama's testing the nation to see how far he can go. And he just ran another test and he found out that there's no opposition even in the military. He just ran another test in the circuit board and he found out there's no opposition even in the military. So the next event will even be greater than this one. That's what I think.
Worse, the opposition in the military is like someone that called your show yesterday and said, I'm getting out. I'm leaving.
Well, they would like that. They like nothing better than they can people it with feminasties and others who can't even fly airplanes.
Right. It's a self-purge.
Yes, that's interesting. Yes, this went on under Clinton. Many people left the military because of him. They hated him. They hated him to the bottom of their DNA. They left the military.
Right. And that's
all right. So, but what could he possibly do next? For example, that would be on a tragic, Titanic scale. I'll tell you what he's going to do next. I can read the tea leaves. He's going to pass amnesty with the stroke of a pen, and there'll be a little outcry here and a little outcry there, and nothing will happen. Because Eric Cantor has already said it's biblically approved to pass amnesty for the 60 million illegal aliens, or whatever the number will really be.
You think
that's coming next? So now you have to go on the checklist of the Obama madness and ask yourself, what's on his checklist? What has he not accomplished yet? Well, he hasn't taken your guns away from you yet. He hasn't banned free speech yet. He's got a lot of work to do in the few years that remain, and him and Axelrod are certainly working overtime to make certain that their agenda is complete before they go into the so-called private sector, or worse yet, go into running the United Nations so they can dominate the planet with their madness.
Yeah, that's
so the next thing on his checklist after releasing this deserter and releasing five generals of the Taliban army and getting away with it, hardly a ripple reached him. He's saying he'd do it again. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a fake controversy. And that's because he lives in his own bubble. Nobody in his own party will even tell him what he's doing. That is like the Mad King Ludwig. You have to read about the Mad King Ludwig of Bavaria and how badly this can end for this country. So the next thing is amnesty for the illegal aliens. After that, it's guns. After that, it's freedom of speech. And what will be left after that? Massive re-education camps for those who don't kowtow to the New World Order. Anything is possible under this mad administration. Anything. Now, I don't want to go down that road either. I want to know what I'm talking, referencing. In the last few years, do you remember when Muslims were seen on airplanes? A test flight? I forget what it was called. What was it called? Can someone call me? I'll give you a gift if you know what I'm talking about. A dry run. Remember when they would jump up on airplanes and go, Allah Akbar, and rush toward the pilot's door and then go back to their seats and then not do anything wrong? They were doing a dry run, it was said, to see how far they could go, what they could get away with. Do you remember that, the dry runs over the last few years? Okay. Obama is doing a few dry runs right now with rushing the pilot's compartment of the heart and soul of the United States of America to see just how far he can go before he takes over the controls. And like Malaysian Airlines, we disappear into the bottom of the sea as a nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. You know, there's a website that has images that have been snuck out of the Texas prison where the so-called children, illegal children, are being held. If you actually look at these pictures, many of these are men, hardcore, hardened criminals who have surrounded themselves with young children in order to invade this country. And they're being brought in here for a purpose. This is not about a humanitarian crisis. This is about bringing in an army of the night. Mixed in with these children are hardened criminals. Mixed in with these children are hardened gang members. Mixed in with these children are some of the worst people on the planet. And we're supposed to believe that it's our duty to give them citizenship? What sane nation on earth would allow this to happen? What sane nation on earth would roll over to a charlatan like Obama at every turn? Rich on WABC, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Savage, I got to tell you, you are the only national host that's talking about these things. You really are a warrior, a drop-dead warrior, willing to risk it all for the good of our country. I'm not exaggerating this. Just like the farmers that left their farms and their families to go beat the British, you're the one who's standing out there talking about reading the tea leaves, as you put it. I think this is much bigger than Obama.
Certainly think so, but he's a very, very convincing performer for those who are really pulling the strings. This is how he got where he is. They handpicked him when he was a young man, maybe 16 to 18 years old. They cultivated this man for that long to bring him along in order to do to this country what's being done.
He used his power to tell an aircraft carrier to turn left, and it turns left, to give a presidential pardon to five prisoners, and as a payback for their support of him in the future. And he's a broken-hearted man from a broken family that is being supported by a broken-hearted country. And you've got your finger right on it. It's not Obama, and it's not these people.
No, I wouldn't say broken-hearted at all. I think his heart is quite intact, and I think he has an animus for America that has been with him ever since childhood. I think he is, there's a great story in his family history of anti-Americanism. His mother was a left-wing fanatic. His father was an anti-American. I mean, how far back do you have to go to understand that this man is not like this country ever, ever? And now he's running the country. So where is he going to take the country? And who does he really hate in the country? It's not the whole country he hates. It's not the land he hates. No, it's something else. It's the principles of the country that he hates. It's the origins of the country that he hates. It's the ethos of America that he hates, that he is trying so desperately to alter in his own image. And what is his own image? What is Obama's image for the future of America? After all, he said that he wants to transform America. Well, as I wrote 2 books ago, transform into what? What is his model? Is it Beijing? Is it another nation's history that he wants to... What is the transformation that he's trying to achieve? Has he ever described what his battle really is? Hitler wrote Mein Kampf, which was my battle or my struggle. He was very clear as to what he wanted to do to his nation and his country. He spelled it out pretty clearly from the beginning what he was going to do in Mein Kampf. But Obama never spelled out what he's going to do. But those who he has worshipped, those who his mentors are, have spelled out what they would like to do to this country. And Obama is their factotum. Obama is doing what Alinsky dreamed of, and all of the other street communists have dreamed of for well over since, let's say, 1917, 1920, ever since the Russian Revolution. We've had our own American revolutionaries who want to transform this nation into something it was never intended to be. And while Russia engaged in that experiment, which led to the deaths of 80 million people, destroyed Russia, turned it into a prison camp from which they're only slowly extricating themselves, Obama's never yet seen the results of his own desires. He has not seen the results of what Mao Zedong actually did in China, but he'd like to take us down that same road. He has not seen the results of what Pol Pot did in Cambodia, but if he continues down this road, there's liable to be mountains of human skulls within your lifetime. Let me tell you, this is more dangerous than you think. This is not a laughing matter. It's not a joking matter. This is a very serious issue. And although I can only do it so long and so often, there comes a time when you're going to have to understand that everything is at stake. He is out to destroy the country. I came to that conclusion recently. I didn't want to believe it. I try to believe to the opposite. I don't believe it anymore. I believe he has every intent and purpose on destroying every element of this society that is good and replacing it with that which is bad. How much farther do I have to go than what he just did to the U.S. military's image? How much farther do I have to go? How about the Blue Angels? Have you seen what he did there?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282.
Savage.
Come on. I mean, we are grasping at straws now. Is that what the Republicans are resorting to now? We're going to nitpick over the number of prisoners we exchanged? We have, throughout the tenure of many Republican and Democratic presidents, including George W. Bush, including President Nixon, President George W. Bush released 500 detainees from Guantanamo. So, you know, we should not be second-guessing.
Now, that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, not known for intelligence or balance. And while Bush released 500, they were low-level detainees who were arrested for no reason whatsoever. They were just swept up in a dragnet. These are the hardest of the hardcore. So once again, she's a lying Democrat from Florida. I mean, which is, you know, the land of the hanging Chad. And in my opinion, she belongs in Chad. A woman like her should be deported to Chad. But that would be extremist for me to say that. Her rhetoric belongs in Chad, not in America. And we're talking about extremism. There's another example of a maniac. This is a woman who will say anything to support King Obama. There's nothing he could do. If he interred his political opponents, she would say that we're being extremist and demanding that we not be interred. This is who she is. She's a very dangerous woman. But she's not the issue. It's a nation of problems that we have right now. The Taliban themselves are saying we're inspired to kidnap more. Look at the head of the Drudge Report, where it says, asked whether the Taliban would be inspired by the exchange to kidnap others, a commander laughed and said, definitely. Definitely. He said, definitely. Now, of course, that isn't known by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She only knows how to do the laundry. She knows how to clean Obama's dirty laundry. That's why I call her affectionately Debbie Wasserman Schultz, because what she does for a living is clean Obama's dirty laundry. And here we have the head of the Taliban themselves saying, yes, of course, this is good for us. We're very excited. I'm quoting now. I cannot explain how our people are happy and excited over this unbelievable achievement. This is a historic moment for us. Today, our enemy for the first time officially recognized our status. He goes on. And he says, of course we'll be inspired to kidnap others. He laughed, Debbie. Definitely, says the Taliban commander, Debbie. He says it's better to kidnap one person like Bergdahl than kidnapping hundreds of useless people. It has encouraged our people, Debbie. The Taliban commander said, now everybody will work hard to capture such an important bird. Let's hope that Debbie Wasserwoman Schultz does not make a visit to Afghanistan, because she may be one of those important birds that they decide would be great for a trade. So we have an extremist president who was so out of the ken of normalcy, even within the Democrat leftist machine, that they're distancing themselves from the extremist president. And I think that I should invite you to call on the extremist issue, because it's novel. There's other stories. Hillary Clinton has demanded the New York Times back off from critical reporting. She met with them and she told them absolutely what to say. There's many other stories. Central America is reporting that there is encouraging reports being put out in their countries telling them to bring their children to America. And so they're bringing them to America. Taliban commander predicts more kidnappings due to the Bergdahl deal. How do you feel about that one? How do you feel about Sauerkraut Hammer on Fox News saying that he backs the Bergdahl swap? Let's go back to that one. I think people got lost in the shuffle. They forgot Sauerkraut Hammer's statement in clip two.
Had the choice been mine, I would have made that same choice. It's a difficult decision, and I would not attack those who would have done otherwise.
So Charles Sauerkraut Hammer is now basically a mouthpiece for the Taliban. The Taliban commander said we're inspired to kidnap more people. But I guess that it doesn't affect Charles Sauerkraut Hammer. He could look very dour tonight and very intelligent by looking dour. And people could say, well, you know, although I don't agree with his opinion, he's a very bright man. How do you know he's bright? That's like liberals who listen to NPR and they have Vivaldi music playing in the background or some other classical tripe. They think that it's a high-class show because of Vivaldi music. But now, shockingly, I should say not so shockingly, Charles Sauerkraut of Fox News, a man I've not been impressed with. I think he's way overrated. Because of his sad demeanor, people think he's intelligent. They confuse his dour looks for intelligence. They think somehow if you're depressed looking, you're smart. But finally, he's shown his true colors. He's always been a double player. Krauthammer's always played for the other side, which is why I affectionately call him Charles Sauerkraut, because of his sour demeanor. So that's what's going on in the country right now. That is exactly what's going on in the country right now, and we have many other topics. I want to talk about extremism, and the only way for you to understand this is for me to put it in reverse. Now, let's say we had elected in 2008 a white man from Somerville, USA, who had spent 20 years in an extremist Christian church that preached white supremacy and then denied that he had listened to the preacher preach white supremacy. And the preacher had been a member of the Ku Klux Klan, and he became president and surrounded himself by extremely radical right-wing ideologues, Health and Human Services, Defense Department, closed down the EPA. And we had this right-wing president now for 6 years doing one imperious thing after another and shocking everyone daily with an outcry running across the land. Then you'd understand what we're talking about when I say to you extremism, because we have the most extremist president in American history who is so smooth and such a con man. I mean, after all, he's not stupid. He didn't become president by being dumb. He's the greatest con man in the history of America, a man with no experience whatsoever, with a shady background on the far left, as president, getting away with virtual murder. And so what is extremism? Well, let's look at the definition first. Radicalism, fanaticism, extreme, the thesaurus would say, excess, the ultimate, maximum, limit, top, utmost, uttermost, last extremity, bitter end, etc. You get the picture. An extremist is defined in the thesaurus as radical, fanatic. Extreme is defined as an adjective, of course, immoderate, dire, drastic, ultra, utter, rank, extremist, radical, rabid, fanatical. Excessive is defined in a different way. Intense is defined in another way.
Excessively is defined in another way. So by any definition, Obama is an extremist. So I'm asking you, if we had had a stealth Manchurian candidate of the right who had gone to a church for 20 years and listened to a preacher preaching white supremacism and calling for the most extreme acts in America along the lines, let's say, of the Third Reich, but not quite as extreme, because Reverend Wright, to his credit, didn't call for the extermination of any race. We have to give him credit for that, for his moderation in that regard. But let's say as close to the wall as you could get without having the FBI, you know, invade your church for inflammatory remarks that could set people off. And we had elected this right-winger, this white man who wore a cross, by the way, in every presentation. And instead of saying Allah be praised in some of his speeches, he would say, praise the Lord, bless Jesus, etc. If this extremist right-winger had won the presidency, and we were 6 years into the presidency, and he had enacted the following events, tell me what would be going on in this country. On borders, language, and culture, this extremist right-winger president would uphold the law. He would have put troops on the border with Mexico. He would have started the deportation process, and he would have begun with the 30% of illegal aliens in prisons. He would have started by cleaning out our prisons and deporting them. They would be gone. All the Mexican gangs would be deported out of America. And he would have committed a felony who even had a dual citizenship would be thrown out of the country. Anyone who had a gang affiliation from a foreign country would be thrown out of the country. So that's the first thing the extremists would have done. Of course, the New York Times would have had their panties not only in a bunch, but they would be wearing them on their heads, running up and down Fifth Avenue screaming, the house is on fire. Next, language. The extremist right-wing leader by now would have said English is the law of the land. We're not going to permit any voting in any other language, no voter pamphlets in any language but English. Oh, my God! How racist can you get? You see, in San Francisco, the reason Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Nancy Pelosi and the others continuously get elected, in my opinion, is that they have illegal aliens voting them in. And how do they have it done? They have the ballots are in many languages, 6 to 9 languages, the last I checked. In fact, I have in my hand, I was in the San Francisco city last week, in the city last week, I found this in my mailbox in my apartment. It was in 5 languages. Be a voter. Be a voter. It says, City and County of San Francisco Department of Elections. It's in Mandarin. It's in another Chinese language, probably Tagalog. It's in Participe y vote. Esta es inscrito? ? And then you turn it over. And it says, register to vote or update your registration with a phone number. So in other words, you can call in and say you're a citizen. On the back, it's in 7 different Asian languages. Then it's in Spanish. Todos los electores inscritos pueden participar en estas elecciones primarias. And then they tell you how you have to register simply by phoning a number to the SF elections. Now, that's how a man in prison who dropped out of the race of Chinese ancestry got almost 300,000 votes, more than all the other people running for the office combined. So it's illegal aliens who have elected this wonderful group of merry pranksters who run San Francisco and run California. 855-407-2282 is the phone number. I can ask you a question, but I really don't want to. Here's the thing about talk radio. Let me explain it. It's different than other mediums in that it's a daily grind. It's 3 hours a day. Some markets get it for 2, but it's a 3-hour show. I've been doing it for 20 years. This is not my first career, but it is my last career. I'm the author of 28 books. I have a real PhD from the University of California, which I'm extremely, extremely proud of because it's a real PhD as opposed to the type that liberals give to each other. Honorary degrees for donations and whatnot. And I work very hard to achieve what I have. And I have a very, very strict view of the world, extremely strict view of the world. And the fact is that unless my view of the world comes to be seen as the norm, we're finished as a nation, we'll never survive. And I'll make another statement. What I profess on this show on a daily basis and have done so for 20 years, has now been accepted in Europe for the future of France and England. They have said no to internationalism. They have said no to the EU. They have said no to
the abandonment of their own borders, language, and culture. The English voted overwhelmingly 10 days ago, but you wouldn't know that if you simply only read the New York Times, who buried the story. The English and the French just said no to Obama's vision of the world. But we don't have such a chance here in America because we don't have democracy. We have a monopoly. It's a monopoly of two parties who exist solely for their own power and their own money, and we don't have a people's party. Because if we had a parliamentary system in the United States of America, as exists in England, we'd have a full spectrum of parties from the extreme left run by Barack Obama. It would probably be called the People's Labor Party. And on all the way to the other side, we'd have people representing right-wing views, and we'd have things in the middle, whatever. We'd have a Christian Democrat party, and then the people would have a real choice. Right now, we have no choice. If there was a real choice, we would vote both parties out, and we would also detach ourselves from the disassociation of our own national identity. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Okay, as we come to the end of hour number three, and we're on the cusp of celebrating the great D-Day invasion, which, of course, Obama will try to take credit for, even though he was not yet born, we have to talk about the big story, which is a soldier story, which is what happens when never negotiate with terrorists collides with no one left behind. Well, it's pretty clear this is not what that is about, or that is not what this is about. Because this is not a soldier, by all estimation, who was left behind. This was a soldier who walked out of his post and committed, basically, he abandoned his post. What do you call that? He was not left behind in a battle. So it's a nonsense story to look at it from that point of view. But today I wanted to talk about, and I have talked about, extremism. What is extremism? Extremism is a mark of weakness, not of strength. Anyone in the fighting world will tell you that. When a boxer goes rogue in a ring and tries to get extremist in his moves, he usually gets knocked out. And it's the same with a politician. Obama's right now acting like a boxer who's on the ropes, who's just flailing and acting more extremist by the day. It's a mark of his weakness, not of his strength. But the only way for me to explain that to you on the Savage Nation today is to explain to you the following. Instead of a community organizer, left-wing fanatic, lifetime American-hating, Alinsky supporting, Alinsky student, Reverend Wright, I hate America, church guy. What if we had elected a stealth member of the Ku Klux Klan or a stealth member of a white supremacist group who denied he had ever been a member of a white supremacist group, who said he was not a member of the white supremacist group, even though he sat in the church for 20 years listening to white supremacist lectures, and he became president. And he started to act on the right side of things the way Obama's acting on the left side of things. What would these extremist things be that a extreme right-winger would be doing to America right now without Congress, without the approval of Congress, without the approval of the people, certainly, without the approval of the courts, just acting imperiously on his own? What would some of these extremist things be? Well, I don't know. Let's start with the border. Let's say the extremist would say, we're going to enforce our immigration laws. That would be extremist, wouldn't it? Wow, could you imagine that? An extremist right-wing nut who enforces immigration laws. And then he says, English shall be the language of the land. We're not going to let any votes in any other language. We're not going to conduct any official business in any other language. Why, I guess that would be considered racist and extremist, wouldn't it? And then what if he was an extremist with regard to the cultural values of America, built upon the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, which are founded, by the way, on the Bible, the Christian Bible. Oh, my God! How extremist can you get? So you understand what I'm saying to you. The left has so co-opted the language and the dialogue that we think that what is the norm of civil behavior is now considered extremist right-wing behavior. And what is considered, by any analysis, to be extremist left-wing fanaticism of the type enacted by Obama and his four horsewomen of the apocalypse is considered to be just fine. Now you understand everything in a nutshell. So take this message home tonight on the Savage Nation, which is extremism in politics is a mark of extreme weakness, not of strength. Obama is exhibiting all the signs of an extremist who is extremely weak. Well, that's it for tonight on the Savage Nation. Good
Savage.
We don't keep our opinions to ourselves, and neither should you. On the only conservative station in the Bay Area, Hot Talk 560 KSO.